Good evening, this is Otis, your impromptu net control. The call is Whiskey 4 India Oscar Delta, and welcome to the Mocking Amateur Radio Society System Fusion Radio Net. This net operates on the Minnesota-Wisconsin room, number 21493. This is an open technical net, but please check in through net control. Net control stations are K0ORK, 80MI, K9EQ, N0YQ, N0JOL, and N0PXT. The Balkan Amateur Radio Society takes its name from Earl Balkan, the founder of Medtronic. Earl was always interested in radio, and it's a founding sponsor of the Pebbick Museum of Broadcasting. Earl allows us the use of his name because he is a strong supporter of learning, experimentation, and helping others. You can learn more about VARS and Earl at www.w0mikedeltatango.com. The 444075 and the 444525 operate from the Medtronic facility near Highway 10 and I-35 West in Mounds View, Minnesota. The chat window is available at hamoperator.com. Select MinWiz, then MinWiz Chat. This is the format for the net this evening. The Nectro will take check-ins from stations with traffic. Traffic on this net is questions or comments. And we'll ask for announcements before we start taking check-ins so everyone knows where we're at. We'll ask for any announcements from anyone at this time. W4IOD standing by. All right, I'm hearing nothing as far as announcements, so we'll start the general check-in portion of the net. We'll pretty much ask if you have any questions or comments. Please reply with your name, city, and state. We'll acknowledge your call and get back to you as far as the order we receive them. If you cannot get in here on the System Fusion or over the YSF Reflector, you can email us at hamoperator.com or go to hamoperator.com, select MinWiz, then MinWiz Chat, and we'll take your questions that way. But at this time, is there anyone with any questions or comment, any traffic for the net? Remember, name, city, and state.
KE0YJJ, Rick in Pine Island, Minnesota.
Kilowatt 9 Echo, Quebec, Chris, Escondido, California.
All right, well, Net Control will acknowledge the two stations that I heard on this end, and pardon us this evening, we seem to have a plethora of technical issues going on behind the scene, including letting the smoke out of some equipment. So with summertime comes the summertime electrical storms. So we have some internet issues, but thankfully this one's still working. So we've got KE0YJJ, Rick, and K9EQ, our good friend Chris, and also former Net Control here on the MinWiz Net. So we'll start with Rick, KE0YJJ. Good evening, Rick, and your question or comment for the net this evening.
Well, good evening, good evening. This is Rick in Pine Island, KE0YJJ. And I operate the KE0YJJ repeater here. And it looks like I'm off into my own room now. But I've got the script in my repeater that automatically changes to rooms to various nets. For instance, MinWiz. It automatically changes theirs there for about an hour, and then it goes back to BS Acres. My issue or my question is, when I have my FT3D and my 300 connected to the repeater via PDN mode, neither one of those radios will hear what's being said because it's a direct connection via PDN and I'm not using RF. If I use RF, I can hear what the repeater's sending out. But in PDN mode, The 300 and the FD3D do not receive the audio through the PDN. So lo and behold, the question is, how do I make the PDN nodes hear my repeater?
Okay, Rick, not to answer your question with a question, but I'm gonna answer your question with a question first because we actually need more information. So you're actually connected to your repeater in your own wires X room. And I'm going to ask you on the FTM 300 and the FT3, are you in analog mode or is that a full-time digital repeater that you're operating there in Pine Island?
It is a full-time digital repeater, POTUS, and the PDNs connect to it just fine. And when it's acting as its own room, everything's fine. But when I connect to MinWiz, say, the two PDN radios do not hear anything.
Okay, so that I fully understand the issue. As long as you're connected to your room associated with your HRI 200, you hear everything just fine. But when you bring the FT3D and the FTM300 into the MinWiz room, you're not hearing any audio. Is that correct? Is that the issue? That's what I'm looking for, Rick, clarification.
Yes, Otis. It's not when I bring the individual devices into MinWiz, because the devices are connected to my repeater. The only thing I'm bringing into MinWiz is the repeater. I'm connecting to the MinWiz room. And the other two PDNs are connected to the repeater via PDN mode. They're not connecting to MinWiz, so to speak.
All right. So, before I turn this over to someone a little more intelligent than me, such as K9EQ, I'm trying to fathom here. So, when you put the individual radios in the MinWiz room, you get audio with no problem. It's when you put the repeater in the MinWiz room, you stop hearing audio on the two radios. Is that the issue?
Yes, sir, Otis, that is exactly the issue.
Okay, and I'll turn this over to Chris after making this comment, but from what I'm hearing here, you're connected to your room on both the FTM300 and the FT3D. When you put the repeater, when you take the node out of the room, which is your repeater, I would presume that the radios are staying connected to your room and they're not joining the MinWiz room such as your repeater is. So it's not a package deal. And like I said, I'll get clarification on this from Chris. He's a little more intelligent. But the way I understand the way WiresX works, if your repeater's not in your room, your HRI 200, it's still hosting your room, so anyone can connect in. Like, I'm not in my room now. The repeater is in the MinWiz room. But if someone wants to connect into the W4IOD room, they can. It's still there for them to use. The repeater's just not in that room. So, K9EQ, can you clarify or confirm that I am telling Rick indeed the correct, set of circumstances that's creating the issue that he's having? Over to you, Chris.
Yeah, Odie, I think you nailed it. This mistake gets made a lot, and that is the node and the room have nothing to do with each other, even though they're running on the same computer. So the node is what's connected to the repeater. Whatever the node is connected to, that's what the repeater is going to be listening to. The room is independent. You can turn the room off. It doesn't even have to be on. To get the repeater to listen to that, to your local room, you have to connect it to that room, or it's going to be silent. If you do disconnect on the repeater's not going to do anything. So the room is still there. On your PDN devices, you would have to both, you'd have to switch them to the MinWiz room as well to hear MinWiz. I would suggest just listening to the repeater and be done with it. And I think that's it. I mean, FYI, MinWiz is a mixed mode room, so it will not work with a digital only version of PDN. You have to use the mixed mode version of PDN that has the analog cables connected to the computer to be able to use the MinWiz, whereas with a digital-only room, you don't have to worry about that. So anyway, Rick, I think that's what's going on. So if you leave the PDN nodes still connected to your own room, they're obviously not going to hear MinWiz because we're in a different room. Does that make sense? Go ahead, Rick.
K9EQ, Chris, yeah, I think you nailed it. I have not tried to run the, like, for instance, my repeater is now in MinWiz. I know out there in the world, if there are people that connect to my room, or that are always connected to my repeater, that moves different rooms, and as long as they're connected to my repeater coming over RF, because I can see the repeater is repeating that, they should be able to hear everything. But if they are physically connected to my room, to my repeater, then their PDN has got to have the analog plugins, you know, the other devices and all that. Do I understand that right?
Nope. So if a node attempts to connect to your repeater, they have to use a different number than connecting to the room. So it's 10,000 less. If your repeater is connected to a room and you have the option set, and I'll look for it here. Where is it? There is an option that says accept calls while in round QSO rooms, and I don't have it checked. So that means if somebody were to connect to my repeater, they would just be rejected. Otherwise, if they connected to the repeater, it would disconnect the repeater from the room, and off you go. So I think a lot of people leave that disconnected. If you had that checked, accept calls when in round room, and somebody contacted the repeater node, then it would disconnect from the room and it would connect to the person who's trying to connect the PDN station. So node-to-node connection is a one-to-one. Node-to-room connection is a one-to-many. So if your repeater is connected to the room and they connect to the room, then they will go through the repeater. If the repeater is not connected to the room, then they won't go through the repeater. Another way of saying this is the room is just a server. If nobody connects to it, I mean, you have to be connected to it by a node to hear things. You can't just listen to the room. You have to connect to it with a node to be able to interact with the room. Without any nodes, the room would just sit there and do absolutely nothing. And it was Odie that got it figured out, so I give credit to Odie on this one. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay, Roger that. I totally understand. What I was trying to do, I mean, this is not something for me personally. I'm trying to provide the MinWiz room, in this example, to the people who are nearby that I don't want to call them lazy, but it's more convenient for them to connect to one repeater, stay connected to it, and the repeater offers them various nets. You know that script that I'm running and that. And that's all I'm trying to do is use that script to move my repeater around so people can hear something on the repeater.
Okay, well, maybe I'm missing something here, but they don't even need a PDN. They just need to set their radio to the frequency of your repeater.
Roger that. That's what I said in the very, very beginning. When they connect, or when they listen to the room via RF, when they listen to the repeater via RF, regardless of what room the repeater's in, they'll hear it. If they're connected RF, but anytime you do a PDN to the repeater, if you're not in the repeater room, for instance, my repeater is 62620 for the room, and the actual repeater is 52620. So if they're connected to 62620, they won't hear anything. I understand that because it's its own room. Thank you, I get it.
Yeah, and then if they, you check that checkbox that I mentioned, if they connected to 620, then they would connect directly to the repeater, but then the repeater disconnects. I mean, if they're in range of the repeater, they just ought to listen to the repeater. There's a lot of effort done in Wires X to prevent bridging, and even if you could, say, bridge your room to... A lot of effort is done in this, but the software works hard to prevent two rooms from being linked together. So that's on another tangent. Odie, back to you. K9 EQ.
All right, Chris, and thank you very much. And let's see. Rick, do you have any further comments or questions in regards to nodes versus rooms? Hopefully that that takes care of your initial question anyhow.
Yes, sir, it does. And I'm learning still. It's after having this for a year now, I'm still learning new stuff all the time or running across things I need to read. And I didn't realize it was this much work. But anyways, yes, thank you very much. You guys are very helpful, and you solved that issue. But I'm getting new ones every day. Thank you much, Otis, and take care, 73s, and 73s to the net. KE0YJJ, I'll be sending it back to you, Otis.
All right, Rick, well, I'm glad we actually brought some clarification to your question. Some folks out listening that may have the same question or wondering how that actually worked as well. So we appreciate you bringing the question to that. Good question. Rick, have a good evening. Break with KE0YJJ. K9EQ, Chris, you seem to be the man of the hour. Go ahead with your question or comment or your traffic. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about security of Wires X. Well, indirectly. And what I've noticed, so one of the things we do over here on MinWiz is we use RDP to remotely control the computers. And if you go to hamoperator.com, we have a guide for both Windows 7 and Windows 10 setting up a Wires X node, so it can operate 24/7, 365 without even needing a display and keyboard attached. And there's a lot of tricks to that. But one of the things Pete and 80MI and I have been suggesting is the use of RDP. In that document, we suggest putting RDP on a non-standard port. Normally it's on 3389. And it's an easy thing. In fact, you don't even have to do the work. You can just go on certain places on the internet and you can browse through these listings, and it'll give you a list of all the IP addresses where they found RDP sitting on 3389. We recommend changing to another port. And indeed, when you do that, you almost never get bothered by somebody messing around trying to figure out how to access your computer. Well, that changed a little bit. Not too bad. I've been logging two IP addresses in the Netherlands, which has been pinging on my relocated RDP port, trying to log into RDP. They have not been successful because they don't know the password. So you do actually need to know something about how to log into RDP, like the username and password, and believe me, you're not going to guess my username and password. I don't even remember it. That's why we have password managers. But I thought this was a good time to mention some of these things. Windows makes it particularly hard to figure out what the heck is going on the network. They have a system of events that I find almost useless. So I thought I would just mention a few things about the firewall. And even if you're not running a WiresX node, this might be interesting stuff regarding the firewall on your Windows computer. If you go into the control panel, you'll see an item for the firewall. If you go into that, you'll see an option for monitoring. And first of all, it's good to have the firewall turned on. Second of all, monitoring is turned off by default because it can generate a lot of activity. If you go up to the properties on the firewall, you'll see tabs and you can control the logging. Basically, you can log accepted connections and dropped connections. So what happens when somebody tries to connect to RDP is over in the terminal services events for RDP, you'll see that a connection was made to RDP. So somebody attempted to make a connection, but that's as far as they got, because, you know, in my case anyway, I don't see a login being successful. And I should note that my WiresX user account does not have administrative privileges, so you want to make sure you've got to type in a password if you have to do something associated with the administrator. That solves a lot of the problems you might run up against. But I just don't like people using my bandwidth. Anyway, so I noticed these events in the event manager looking under terminal services for RDP, where there were all these connections being made to RDP, but no action. So it took me a while. I finally figured out how to get the monitoring working on the firewall, and you have to enable the, basically have to click the boxes to allow everything for monitoring. And then you can click on the link, and a thing will come up, and you probably have to scroll down to the bottom, and it'll show you the most recent allow or drop decisions that the firewall made. That allowed me to basically find the IP address of the stations that were trying to log into my RDP port. What you do is you just look, part of the entry in that log is the port number that you're using. Just look for that port number. Just search for it. If it shows up there and it isn't you logging in, you've got somebody trying to log in. So anyway, that's how I found out about these two IP addresses that were trying to go in there. So I know that's a lot that I've thrown out there, but maybe all it takes is just going in and looking at the firewall and fiddling around with it and seeing how that works and looking for the monitor function. So once again, the firewall should be turned on. It should block all connections except for those where a rule exists. And the monitoring thing is kind of interesting to see everything that your computer is chatting to. So if you want to know what your computer is doing when you're not looking, that's the place to look for it. Anyway, of course, the ultimate solution is to run a VPN behind your NAT router and connect to it that way. That's the most secure way to do it. But generally, RDP is okay. This is Windows 7. I'm not really worried about it, and it is of the whole time I've been doing this, which is years and years and years, two IP addresses in the Netherlands is all I've been able to log. So, you know, it's kind of limited, and they're never going to get the password, but they're using my bandwidth. Heck with them. Back to net, K9EQ.
All right, Chris, and I didn't know if you wanted to comment on some of the other team viewers and what have you as far as folks using that, but yeah, we use remote desktop here as well. And Chris actually has compiled excellent guides as far as setting up your WiresX computers, both on Windows 7 and Windows 10, over at hamoperator.com. Chris, do you want to touch base on something like TeamViewer and why that's not a good idea, or do you just want to let that go?
Well, I'll mention it, and for some reason people seem to like TeamViewer. It gets used a lot by admins and stuff like that. Joran Min was here. We really recommend against using TeamViewer. It's an extremely invasive program, and it generally tends to cause more problems than not. Once again, I think in those documents we mentioned RDP as being our preferred choice. So, you know, some people don't have the pro version or whatever it is of Windows. You know, if you have the home version, unless you hack around a little bit and, you know, set the right thing and turn RDP on, it's not available to you. The other solution that we recommend is the Chrome browser of all places, and normally I try to stay away from Google as much as I can, but the Chrome browser has the ability to do remote desktop as well. And I've experimented with it, and a number of people here on MinWiz are using that with great success. So RDP is generally our first choice because it's not Google. And then if you have the Chrome browser installed, you can also do it through the Chrome browser. And the Chrome browser, one of the things I don't like about it, is very heavyweight. It really takes a lot of resources from the computer. That's about it. Back to you, Odie, K9EQ.
All right, Chris. A lot of good information in that, and for some folks, it probably informative as far as not only initially hearing it, but a refresher for me. And we appreciate your efforts in establishing all the guides and keeping us up to date. And especially in today's times, there's always someone getting hacked. And I pretty much followed your setup to the letter. On the Windows 7 machine here, I haven't upgraded either. It's the standalone computer that's running the WiresX software, and if it's not broken, don't fix it. Speaking of heavy and extra baggage, you get into, and not to get me on a soapbox, you get into a whole lot more issues with Windows 10. So Windows 7 works fine for us, so we leave it alone. It automatically restarts every Sunday morning at 2:00 Eastern, and it runs, and we don't have to do anything to it. So thank you for your effort and your information, as always. That will wrap things up with K9EQ on his security issues, and we appreciate that, and we'll ask anyone else with traffic, question or comments, please your name, your city, and your state. We'll acknowledge you and get right back to you. Please call Net Control now.
Kilo Golf 5, Alpha Whiskey Lima, Felix in Axtell, Texas, with some comments.
Whiskey T1, Delta United Delta, Paul, Lynn, Massachusetts, with a question.
All right, well, acknowledge that's what we got here in Kentucky anyhow. We picked up three that time, at least we heard three. KG5AWL, that's Felix down in Texas. 80MI, Pete in Lena Lakes, Minnesota. And Whiskey1 Delta, Uniform Delta, that's Paul. And we'll get back to you here in a minute, Paul. Those are the three that we picked up. So we'll start at the top of the list, KG5AWL, Felix, who is a plethora of information as well. Good evening, Felix. Good to hear you. Hopefully you're doing well. And your question or comment for the net this evening, go ahead, it's yours.
This is KG5AWL. Thanks, Otis, and hello to the net. I'd like to add something to what Chris K9EQ mentioned about the Windows remote desktop. We had a couple of our direct connect computers that were where we saw that some Russians were trying to hack into it. And we had our port way up in the, between the 40 and 50,000 range, so we had it stuck way up there. They were really pounding hard on it. Now, the PCs, we were using remote desktop, so we had the pinhole in the router. Again, we were doing the port address translation and not using 3389 on the outside. And somehow they found it on two of our Direct Connect PCs. And, in fact, they crashed one of them. They were pounding on it so hard that they, you know, trying to crack the password that I think they crashed one of them. Did a little investigating. I found this by looking at the event viewer under Windows Logs Security, and it showed a ton of audit failures. So apparently they had found it that there was a Windows RDP there, and they were trying to crack the password. Of course, they were unsuccessful. And I tracked, and what I did is I turned on the firewall and blocked their subnet. But boy, as soon as I blocked one subnet, they come in on another subnet. So, and I found five different subnets and Class A subnets, all from Russia, that were trying to hack into these two different computers at two different IP addresses, so and two different ports. So I hear what Chris is saying, and I don't won't disagree with him, but man, they these guys found it, and they were really pounding on it. Let me go ahead and reset. This is KG5AWL returning. Just as an example, on the router, I gathered some statistics, and whereas the WiresX stuff, you know, the 46 ports, 46,000 ports for WiresX, they were doing, it showed about 600 packets. And the, on the one, they were trying to come into the RDP, there was 5,240,000 packets. During the same time period. So once they found that RDP, they were really, really trying to pound on it. Now, one of the solutions I did was just go into the firewall and open up an inbound route or inbound rule and just block the subnets. That PC is not going to be talking to Russia anyway. So, and I found five different subnets that I needed to block. Hopefully that makes sense. I've got another comment, but I'm going to toss it back to you, Otis, see if all that makes sense. This is KG5AWL, back to net control.
All right, Felix. Yes, it does. And it's one of those things where, you pretty much take it for granted as far as leaving your WiresX commuter hooked up that no one's going to actually try to hack it, but apparently, idle hands. Let's turn it over to Chris and see if he wants to add any additional comments, and then we'll come back to you for additional. Felix, it made sense to me. It did. K9EQ, W4IOD, over to you, Chris.
I don't know, Felix. They must like your IP address for some reason to go to that much work. I don't think Russian hackers are that interested in WiresX nodes. Yeah, it is annoying because hackers can, or these people can use a lot of bandwidth making all these attempts, and basically if they're hitting you hard enough, it can disrupt the services and things like that, which would seem counterproductive for them. And, yeah, anybody that runs these servers experiences these sorts of things. The server that runs the YSF reflector, it runs under Linux, thank God. I ended up installing a system on it that if you attempt to connect, I think more than three times unsuccessfully, it blocks your IP address for like 5 days, something like that. And it dramatically reduced the amount of traffic on the server that runs the YSF reflectors. But yeah, it's not unreasonable to see like millions of these connections or attempts being made. It's just phenomenal how much of the internet bandwidth is used to do this. But I haven't seen the Russians over here. That, I'm curious, Felix, why they like your IP address so much. Anyway, over to you, Felix, for your other comment there, K9EQ.
Just KG5AWL. Well, I don't know why they like them either. These are actually at our repeater sites, and they're remote. There's really nothing there except the Wires XPC. And the way I found these, and people can do them, is, of course, open up Event Viewer, look under, when you open it up, look under Windows Log. And under Windows Log, there's a subsection called Security, and which showed up as an audit failure. And you can look in that audit failure detail, and it will give you the IP address of who's trying to hack into it. And I did a search on each one of those IP addresses, and sure enough, they all showed up from Russia. So I have no clue. My second comment is we've been working with a IMRS polling problem. Where router and IMRS don't get along when we have a network outage. And living in Texas is here the last couple of weeks, we've had plenty of opportunities for network outages as several of us and our sites are wireless internet. We don't have cable to the house or any of that other stuff. We just got to get it through the airwaves. So that leaves a lot of opportunity for failure. Anyway, we contacted Yaesu, and I mentioned this a couple of months ago, and they did provide us some beta firmware, and we have been running that on two different clusters, and I do believe they have resolved the problem. We are not having the issues that we were having with the IMRS polling failing between devices, between repeaters that we were having that required manual intervention. So, we are running beta software provided by Yaesu, and I am going to contact them and let them know that it seems to be working fine. So maybe they'll get the factory version out to the folks. That's all I have, and I'll turn it back to Otis. This is KG5AWL.
KG5AWL, W4IOD returning. Appreciate the information, Felix, and I have a question for you that leads into my next question. But you had mentioned that. The IMRS stuff, I actually have that ability here. I have yet to find anyone in the Commonwealth of Kentucky that it would like to link up with IMRS, but we appreciate you beta testing the new software. Best way to contact Yaesu, how are you getting a hold of them? This is a word of mouth, and I've listened to John Crook on the podcast, so I just want to verify, how are you, do you have a direct contact with Yaesu when you're commenting on the beta software for the IMRS?
This is KG5AWL. Well, I've been contacting Juan Hernandez and do it both email and via phone. The reason Juan and I have some history, we've gone, I think this is the third issue we've been working with Yaesu on with dealing with repeaters and IMRS and all that other stuff. So that's my access, and as I said, we have some history there. We've found several problems and helped them identify them and get them resolved. So there's some history there, but that's my contact. So I hope he doesn't get mad at me for letting them know. But But anyway, that's what I'm doing. If that answers your question, Otis. Kind of reluctant to let it out there over the airwaves, but you asked the question. I wasn't going to try to hide it. It's just that I don't know if he would, treat everyone exactly the same. As I said, we've been working together on a number of different issues over the years. Back to Net Control. This is KG58WL.
All right, Felix. Yeah, I've spoke to him on the phone personally before regarding my repair. So, yeah, well, you know, you supplied a little more information than I'd actually requested, but that's fine. I just wanted to know, you know, what medium you were using, whether it be phone or email. I do have a question from K9Q as far as the IMRS. He wanted to know if it's installed on the board directly. Or how you're doing that as far as the working with Yaesu on the beta.
This is KG58WL. No, that's a fair question. No, the IMRS firmware goes directly onto the land card. There is a they provided a procedure for doing it. It's easy to do. It's not a real problem to do it. It goes fairly quickly. But it is installed directly on the land card. Back to Net Control. This is KG58WL.
All right, Felix. Well, it's always good hearing from you, and it's one of those things when we get you in here, we'll pick your brain for information. So appreciate you being a big part of the net and sharing your expertise and your experience and everything you guys do down there in Texas. I try to keep Don in line down there as well. Appreciate you being here. Break with KG5AW. Have a good evening, Felix. And let's see. For my friend Pete, whose voice is blown, I sort of led Felix into that question. He was wanting to know the best way to contact Yaesu to send a radio in for repair. I actually wanted to confirm pretty much what John Crook had said on one of his N9UPC had said on one of his podcasts that I've been listening to from time to time. And he's saying call. Be persistent, or if you do email someone at Yaesu, make sure it has a yaesu.com suffix on the email address. So I guess my best advice to you, Pete, is to call and be persistent till you get someone to answer. Hopefully that answers your question. Let's see if anyone has sent one in recently. And what the preferred method was or what worked for you. So before we get to Paul, has anyone sent anything in for repair, and did you have any trouble getting a hold of Yaesu? Try to do it one at a time and call Net Control now.
Net Control, this is KEAKNZ in Monroe, Michigan with a comment.
Well, I pretty much only heard one station in regards to that query as far as how the best way to get a hold of Yaesu is, and hopefully, Tom, you can answer it for Pete. KE8KNZ, good evening, and what do you have for Pete as far as contacting Yaesu?
Well, good evening, Otis, and everyone on the net. Here's my advice to Pete, just like everyone said. Now, Juan is the man. I've dealt with Juan before. My radio was under warranty, and it wouldn't transmit. We received, but it wouldn't transmit. So I sent it back, and I waited for 2 weeks, didn't hear anything. But there's a gal that is there. She's overworked, and she's hard to get a hold of. But once you get a hold of her, they're very accommodating there. Very accommodating. So hang tight, keep calling, and I think Yaesu Customer Service is great. They have my radio for less than a month. Paid the freight back to me, upgraded, new software, everything. I was delighted. I'm talking on it right now, Otis. So, this is KAKNZ in Monroe, Michigan. Back to Net Control.
KE8KNZ, W4IOD returning. Well, appreciate you getting in there, Tom, and letting Pete know and some of the other folks. I know we've got some here locally that are hoarding FT2s that they go in to, for repair, but procrastinating is in their nature. I'm probably pretty sure that Pete wants to go ahead and get his back in there. I know he's got an issue with his 300 and now his 400 needs to go in. So I've been there before as far as the 400, and I think her name's Stephanie. I think I've talked with her as well, but you're absolutely correct. Anytime I've had any issues with Yaesu, my patience and persistence has paid off. I can't say enough about their customer service. They've actually done me a real good job. So appreciate that, Tom, and we'll break with KE8KNZ and 80-0MI. There you go. I think he pretty much agrees with me and Felix. Phone is probably the best way to go, and stay patient and stay persistent. Hopefully I'll get you squared away. Next up, and I appreciate your patience, Paul, and me getting back to you. I'm a little inept sometimes as net control, but I try to be thorough with everyone so that they get your questions answered to the best of their understanding, and we can all proceed forward. W1DUD, good evening, Paul, and your question for the net this evening.
W4IOD, W1DUD, good evening, Otis and Chris and everyone else on the net. It's nice to be back on the air, and had a little some medical issues, but a rough winter, but the doctors did a fine job of me, and I'm sitting outside smoking a cigar. It seems to be back in the saddle again. Anyway, a number of months ago, I'd asked you a question on a FT3DR. I was going to use it as an access radio and use the EDC6 and then hook it up to a power supply and use that empty battery pack that they sell that you could put the rechargeable batteries in. And it was suggested on the net it may not be a good idea. I think John Crook suggested it. And I had called Yaesu, and they said that it shouldn't be an issue, and or I could use the battery that plugs into the cigarette lighter. I don't know exactly what it is. And I figured, well, what the heck, if I blow the radio up, the XY will can buy me another one. So I've been running that now for about 5 months. What I did was I went into my power supply and turned the voltage down to about 11 volts. I run it on low power, and I throw a fan behind the radio itself. Look, I found that when I used a battery pack that was supplied with the radio, that the radio would lose its charge fairly quickly, and I just wanted another cheap option as opposed to getting the battery eliminator and getting another power supply, and it seems to work well. And I knew you had commented on it, Otis, and you had said that John Crook didn't think it was a good idea. I'm just curious as to if you had any more information as to why it might be risky to set it up the way that I have it set up as opposed to using the battery eliminator or just using the battery. I hope I explained that, you know, as clearly as possible. Back to you, Otis.
W1DUD, W4IOD returning. It's one of those things where I don't have an issue explaining what led up to the conversation and why I was sharing that with not only you but the net. It's one of the things that the FT2, it's actually how I ended up with the FT2 that I had. The wall wart actually fried the radio. If I remember correctly, there is a protection diode in that charging circuit. And I think they've actually switched a couple of wall warts for the charging. But anyhow, to get around that, I went to the desktop charger. And when we actually started having the conversation about when the first announcement there was made at Hamvention, oh, geez, it's been 3 or 4 years ago now, on the FT2 and the ability to do that, he had actually recommended to protect that charging circuit, especially if you were going to run it on prolonged periods of time, to look at something alternative. So for me, not that I'm endorsing anyone, I got the battery eliminator from Batteries America, and I just don't like boxing my radio up and sending it to Cypress for repairs. But, you know, out of a mass-produced radio, you're going to have some bad ones from time to time. And I aforementioned some FT2s as far as the battery's going dead. We've had some issues here where the battery keeps going dead. Hey, guess what? It blows that diode. And then it will only run on batteries. It won't take a charger anymore. But we've actually had a couple of fellow hams that have discovered that. And I think Chris is actually recommending running the input voltage lower, perhaps at 8 volts, to avoid an issue like that. But it's not like, you know, it's set in stone. He just recommended that you didn't do it to prevent damage from the radio. Of course, it's your radio. You're exactly right. Your mileage may vary, and it's one of those things where it's like the desktop charger. There's pretty much known issue. Do not touch the little copper contacts on the back or the little brass contacts. There's enough static electricity in your body that will fly the transistor, and there's numerous YouTube videos on how to repair those. But I'm just sharing information with you, Paul, and glad to hear that you're recovering from your health issues. I'll turn it back to you and see if I actually clarified that or made it more confusion. W1DUD to W4IOD. Back to you, Paul.
W4IOD, W1DUD. No, I understand. When I actually put the empty battery pack in there and I turn on the power supply, it shows external DC. So it's just running strictly off the external DC, and with the fan, the thing runs cool even for long nets. So it seems to work fine. And, you know, I'm just curious, one other quick question. So why do they supply a lot of these HTs with the ability to plug them into a cigarette lighter? You use a battery in there. Doesn't that put you at the same type of risk? Back to you, Otis.
Yeah, that's not a problem, Paul. And it's one of those things, just because you can doesn't mean you should. It doesn't mean that they didn't have issues with the wall warts when they first started out either. That's why they kept changing models as far as that. So I don't think we've actually seen any issues, at least I haven't heard of any, on the FT3. More so on the FT2. And it's one of those things where you may be fine. It's just one of those things that it... We just want to make folks aware of that. If you're going to run it, and, you know, that's what I tell folks. If you're going to run it in a busy room, probably, and I know what you said as far as the FT3 is replaceable, but as far as serviceability, you're going to get better service out of one of the older FTM100s or the FTM300. It's real hard for me to put my 400 into that. That's a whole lot of radio. It's just one of those things that I like the way, and not bashing Yaesu, but on the Kenwood HTs, I can plug directly into 12-volt and not worry about it. It goes straight into 13.8, straight into the side of the radio without any issues. So just the way it was designed, my friend. It's just one of those things where, like I said, you may never have any issues with it, but I know with the FT2, there's quite a bit of issues. Back to you, Paul.
W4IOD, W1DUD. Very good, Otis. I'll just wrap it up. Well, Father's Day is coming and up, but they don't have any 300s in inventory, so I guess the XYL isn't going to get me one. 73 to all. Always enjoy the net. Back to you. This is W1DUD. Everyone have a good night.
W1DUD, W4IOD returning. Yes, sir. And if you'll notice, there's not many radios in stock. They have all been bought up, and that's something that N9UPC had covered on one of his podcasts as well. It doesn't mean that they're discontinued. It just means that they're out of stock. And for some reason, there's a shortage of manufacturing. The supply cannot keep up with the demand, so one of those things where, don't mind the follow-up question, but that's why, you know, I try to share information. I actually had an in-depth conversation with John Crook on that, and he's right. You know, as far as the personal digital node, especially the FDM300, the redesign on it, as far as the cooling capability on that, it just runs cooler, and you know what that means, less heat, especially with a lithium-ion battery. And Chris has mentioned that as well, about keeping the temperature stable on them. But good luck with that, Paul, and appreciate the question. We'll break with W1DUD, and I'll let everyone know this net meets here every Monday evening at 7:30 p.m. Central, and we cover all things fusion, and we'll make this last call. If you have a question or a comment before we tie a ribbon on it this evening, please call Net Control now. W4IOD standing by. All right, we're hearing nothing, so before I wrap it up, K9EQ says the FT3 is now in stock at HRO stores, so that's a good thing. That means we're getting things back in, and I think N9UPC actually mentioned that on this podcast, to call your dealer. They'll know when they're getting things in, hopefully. So we appreciate everyone's participation in this, and we'll pretty much ask that... Well, join us here next Monday evening, where hopefully you'll have a more schedule than Net Control K0ORK. And some electronic issues tonight, and hopefully has that resolved. But we appreciate everyone's participation and involvement in the net and helping each other out. That's why we're all here. And I'll ask you to please be patient and allow a couple minutes for folks that would like to disconnect from the room before resuming the use of the room. So thank you for being here. This is W4IOD signing the net clear, and everyone have a safe and enjoyable evening.